This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 104 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And today, Kelvin is talking to Lisa Gansky, author of The Mesh, Why the Future of Business is Sharing. All coming up on Internet Marketing.
Lisa, your book's called, it's about mesh businesses. Can you explain what a mesh business is and what the characteristics of that type of business are?
Absolutely, yes. Mesh businesses are, there's a number of things that tie them together. Fundamentally, the mesh is about a shift in our relationship to the things in our life, our personal life and business. And so the mesh is basically looking for offers that are fundamentally allow for sharing or access to goods and services rather than owning them. So think Spotify, potentially Netflix or Love Film. Those sorts of things are giving access to Zipcar or Streetcar in the UK, GoGet in Australia. Those services are services that leverage a few things. They are taking a physical object or service and making it accessible to many. So you're essentially renting it or gaining access to it as a broad group of customers over and over. That's keeps us as consumers or individuals or businesses from necessarily having to own things that we want to have an experience with, like a film or listening to music. But it's not causing us to necessarily have to own it and manage it through its whole life cycle, like do away with the waste and all of that. Secondly, it's using data. So for the company, from the company's perspective, as an entrepreneur, a company that we started a decade ago was Ophoto. It was one of the first photo sharing services, which we sold to Kodak, and I think is now still called the Kodak Gallery. But one of the things that we learned from that business is it was using, because of the nature of photography, consumer photography is about sharing. We used to say babies, pets, and sunsets. And so basically the idea is that, you know, I come to a party with you and a bunch of friends, take photographs, and then share the photographs with the people at the party who, you know, want to see themselves and other people that they like, you know, having a good time. The nature of photography lent itself to sharing. And so we started to play with the phenomenon of, you know, you pay to acquire one customer, but as people, you know, share out to their network, you get exposed to as a business and a brand, and you gain access to, in our business, it was 5 to 6 new customers. And so we would pay for one. Effectively, the cost of acquisition was 20 or 18% of what it was because it was spread over 5 or 6 customers. Well, many of the social networking companies are learning that and seeing that. So the social phenomenon is a big part of the mesh. So too, related to that is data, the ability to see what sorts of people are using which products at what moments and how to make them more readily available or to gain more kinds of products like that. So if you look at a business like like Love Film or Spotify or Moog or Netflix, Pandora, any of those companies have a lot of information about what kinds of people are listening to which music or watching which films, who they are related to and what those people are watching. And we can start to change the way that individual people discover, like, for example, my ability to discover music and films at this point in my life versus 10 years ago is wholly different and way better, because I have all sorts of people, those I know and those that that I don't, but are just contributing to make the service a better place. So there's this overarching sense of what we often in the business of the web call the culture of generosity. But it's basically the notion that, like Wikipedia and these other services, you contribute to something and it makes it better for the next person. And so as a company, if we think about it from an entrepreneurial perspective, we're getting, you know, instead of selling a film to somebody once or a car or a bicycle to somebody once, you're having the opportunity to interact with them many times over and seeing, you know, who they recommend the service to and how frequently they use which products and all sorts of things that enable a company like Streetcar or Zipcar or Zopa to understand how to package offers, what is it going to take to reach out to a new market, and what is it going to take to delight the current market. And those sorts of things allow for, you know, all those of us who have built companies and brands from nothing understand that a brand is a voice and a product is a souvenir, and our ability to create a brand that resonates with people and then leave something behind that is on message with, or, you know, on voice and on message with the brand is really compelling. So when you look at, you know, Zipcar or Streetcar in the UK, the last few times I've been there, there's a drink company called Innocent, for example. And you look at the packaging and the typeface of the brand, you know, it's a relatively new brand, but it seems to have garnered a lot of appreciation and has quite a bit of distribution. And I think that when we look at brands that resonate with people, you know, certainly we also learn in the business world in the last few years that what your friend says about an experience with a product or a company, or what somebody who acts like or looks like your friend says about it, has a lot more credibility with you and me than what the company says about itself. And so, you know, broad sort of classic old-time advertising is pretty much futile as in terms of being effective. And new other ways of learning and reaching and testing new audiences are necessary. And the mesh, the style of the mesh, is essentially allowing a company, for example, Ford or Nissan with their cars, Fiat, to come out and to make offers through, you know, Daimler, for example, in Europe has come out with a car to go, you know, a way to take branded car sharing. And what it allows them to do, it's a mesh offer. It allows them to continue to offer their vehicles, but in a different format that gives them a lot more feedback from customers and reaches new customers, different customers, ones that don't want to own the car but just have access.
Now, it's very easy to share digital products, but what's the biggest challenges that face people who want to share physical products? I know in the book you talk about kind of car sharing and DVD style mesh businesses like Love Film here in the UK or Netflix in the States. What's the biggest challenge for sharing physical products?
Well, one is location. The business model, you know, so with a digital product, you can, you know, the software model essentially, which plays to all digital products, is since the thing isn't physical, you can resell it many times and your cost of goods is not, you don't have to rebuy the thing over and over again. There might be a different license that you have to gain. Whereas when you have a physical product, you know, you actually need all those cars made available. For example, if there's 1,000 people that want to gain access to a vehicle at a particular time of day, you actually either need them to go into some rideshare program and start to, you know, collaborate in terms of how they get from place to place, or if you need 1,000 individual cars, then you actually need the vehicles. which has in a way spurred a whole other, what I call own to mesh. It's essentially, you know, we already own things in our lives and our businesses. We own factories, we own cars and bicycles and homes and all sorts of goods. And that that we're not starting with a clean slate. And so own to mesh are things like in the UK whip car or in the US relay rides. There's one that just launched called Deways in France. These programs are peer-to-peer car sharing. So it essentially says, you know, you already own your vehicle. You know, we use our vehicles about 8% of the time during the day. So 92% of the time, they're just hanging around, not being used, but costing us money and taking up a lot of space. So the fundamental idea is that people will car share if the car is 1 to 2 blocks from where they are. And most of us have, you know, neighbors' cars that are sitting around either at our home or office that is 1 to 2 blocks from where we are. So the idea is essentially that, you know, where Zipcar or Streetcar is a fleet strategy, the company actually owns the vehicles but micro leases them or shares them with the members. In this case, with Whipcar and Relay Rides, the vehicles are owned by you and me, and we decide, like a vacation share or something like that, we decide at what moments we actually want to use it and when we're not using it, if we want to make it available to our neighbors. So people are making anywhere between 200 and 700 quid, for example, in the UK, and or pounds rather in the UK, and in the US sort of the same range in dollars per month by basically renting out their vehicle to the neighbor when they're not using it.
Now, you talk about access to goods trumping ownership to goods. So it's better to, what's important is having access to something rather than necessarily owning it. Do you think that's a bit of a challenge to the capitalist model and the capitalist way of doing things?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a few things that will happen, right? One is that, so the fundamental aspect of the mesh, because it mostly is organized around physical objects, is that there's a location aspect to it as well as the physical asset, right? So whereas with Flickr or the other examples you gave, you can distribution is very wide. In this case, with mesh businesses, you know, if you are access to your neighbor's vehicle, different from Zopa, you don't really care where the person is that you're loaning money to. In this case, you do care where your neighbor's vehicle is. As it relates to the manufacturing model and the business, so last week I was at TED Motor City speaking to the auto industry executives and folks the evening before the auto show started. And what I think with respect to your question is that we are going to redefine and rethink how products are built, because products are going to become increasingly optimized for sharing. That means that, for example, with respect to cars, you know, they should roll off the assembly line share ready, just like our notebooks were Wi-Fi ready and our televisions were cable ready. The things that we have in our lives, I think, are going to need to be network ready so that we have the option of meshing them when we want to and not when we don't, either while we're owning them and using them.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Or through the life cycle of the product itself. Secondly, you know, the materials that people choose to build products with, there's a lot of thought that's going to go into those from a sustainability standpoint, and that's mostly because finally policies are coming into play that are going to cost manufacturers. They're going to have to show on their P&L the actual real cost of waste, which is quite steep, and so they'll make different decisions about what they build products with. Third, you know, the products will need to be both flexible and durable, enhancing and increasing the capacity for them to be upgraded over the life cycle, and also for the actual number of years that they're able to be used, you know, well. And so, I think those are the sorts of things that are going to. I don't think that the factory model that we're going to stop making things. I think that we're going to make better things, and we're also going to start to understand that we have historically what we called waste was actually premature, and that if we squeeze hard on what we've been calling waste, there's a lot of value in those things.
Is there any particular way in which kind of a mesh style of business would work particularly well with cooperatives or NGOs or charities?
I imagine that will be the case. It's hard for me to kind of give in that, you know, a company that really wants to evolve into the next phase of their life cycle and business. So, for example, you know, Bill Ford last week at Ford in Detroit was talking about, you know, that their realization that Ford is in fact a company that's committed to mobility, not necessarily to making cars. And, you know, that declaration creates a whole different opportunity space for a company like Ford than them hanging on to the idea that they're in fact forever in the auto manufacturing business. I don't know what it means from a shareholder perspective or from a day-to-day operational perspective, but in terms of creating like the mind shift and a new context for how and where they might position themselves and begin to design and compete, I think it's really interesting. So I'd like to think that any company or any industry, any city can think about itself as a platform and begin to build out an ecosystem and understand what it is to create a mesh in and around them. But I'm sure that, you know, there are many businesses that are so in love with their current business models and profit margins that, you know, and frankly, you know, many of them fall asleep at the wheel, right? That it becomes way too comfortable. And we've seen this over and over. I was inside of Kodak at the time that film tanked, right? And there was a business model that was delivering a dollar profit for every roll of film they sold. And they loved that business model. I used to tell them it was, you know, only to be beaten out by like Colombian drug lords or something. It's a big business model. And so it was very hard from a digital perspective, especially when you're starting and you have, you know, 30 or 40% margins to compete with something like film, where there was such an incredible IP advantage. And I think, you know, in this new century, we're shifting a lot of the ideals. Ownership doesn't only relate to physical goods. It's also kind of rethinking intellectual property and the way that we share. You know, if you think about what is crowdsourcing due to patents, what is, the whole process by which innovation and inventions are brought forward on these different platforms today is very, very different than, you know, a company last century, 50 or more years ago, investing in R&D in order to own something that would give them this huge competitive advantage over competition. It's a whole different approach to the market.
Now, on this podcast, we're all about marketing. Do you think that kind of mesh businesses, by the nature of the sharing that's involved with them, are kind of self-promoting? And, you know, what are the challenges for people who want to run a mesh business in marketing that type of company?
I mean, I think that people are, the mesh businesses live inside of a network. So it's a very natural, for example, in the UK, there's something called swishing. The Futura group got together and we're really thinking about, this is years ago, you know, that clothes swapping or secondhand clothing had like a good possibility, but a really kind of crunchy granola hippie reputation. And so they got together, and a number of women, and talked about, you know, how they have all these great clothes that they don't wear anymore. It's not like crummy clothes; they're really fashionable things. So, you know, they, in order to make kind of clothes sharing or secondhand clothes sexy, they came up with this notion of swishing, and they create these swishing parties, and they're, you know, this phenomenon that has gone through various parts of Europe and is throughout the U.S. and I'm probably into Australia and Canada. And swishing is essentially, you know, women mostly, I haven't heard men doing it, coming together, everybody brings something fabulous. You have a chance to pimp the thing that you brought. And basically everybody, you know, has a little bit of wine and a terrific time and spreads the word and cues up the next swishing party. You know, fairly rapidly. It's not, there's not in this instance money exchanged, but there's a lot of value exchanged and relationships built. And one of the other things that's happened and is starting to emerge is people who are open to sharing are open to sharing more than just in one domain. So for example, you know, if I show up at a swishing party, I'm a pretty good target for streetcar or you know, or DeWays or Kiss Kiss Bank Bank or, you know, any of these Zopa, any of these other services that are, you know, that are mesh businesses essentially, because I'm predisposed to that model. I'm really open to access and sharing. And, you know, it's not only will I invite you to, you know, to maybe try out the whip car service because you know you can have my car, I'll offer you a special deal or you know something like this, but I may also maybe able to bring you across sectors, so invite you into Billy and Friends, that's essentially a matching site of buyers and sellers specifically for IKEA goods of all things. You know, there's something called Are You Local. There's a new service that exchanges no money, but essentially it's about exchanging favors for each other. It's a favor bank that was started in the UK called I Can You. And a lot of it is run through Facebook as a Facebook app, but it's really quite interesting because it's basically trading favors among, you know, friends. And then pretty soon, to your point, the whole notion of friends starts to blur the line. There's people that I would, you know, let rent my car, but then there's a different smaller group of people that I would have stay at my home or take care of my dog or, you know. The thing is that I'm, you know, by way of confession, a perpetual entrepreneur. And so when I started to see the phenomenon of the mesh a few years ago, I was imagining that I would start a business because that's my knee-jerk answer to things. and then I started to build out a database, which ended up being about 1,200 companies. And I was building it to try to convince myself to not write a book because a number of my friends who are authors were, you know, pushing me to write a book. And that's not sort of my historical practice. So I was, let's just say, skeptical. So I built out this database, which ended up being about 1,200 companies or organizations or programs around the world in 30 different categories like food, finance, fashion, transportation, energy, art, etc. And so then I suddenly realized, like, oh my God, I have to write a book. There's already 1,200, and I'm, you know, finding more every day. So when I launched the book, I put the website up, and it's morphing into a mesh community directory. It's a global directory right now, but the idea is that, you know, so if you have an idea, a lot of mesh businesses are very local, pop-up stores, you know, these smaller bike and car share services, the swishing parties, all sorts of these things are local. Some people build them as platforms, but you can go and, if you're an entrepreneur, look at these things that are happening around the world in different categories and get interesting ideas. If you have an existing business, it gives you an opportunity to see who's doing what and to potentially find really good partners. If you're a journalist and you're looking for the grounding that this is in fact more than just a little fad, you can dive in and look in particular areas and see the depth at which the meshist is taking over. And then this will be morphed over the next year or so into a much deeper community. But already there's over 3,400 mesh companies worldwide. So it's essentially tripled since September. Kelvin, you make a really good point. I just want to say in closing that that companies in any stage of their life cycle or in any industry can really try a mesh service or opportunity. That the phenomenon is that the platform allows you to go in and do a very small test in a physical market or to partner with somebody to learn about a new kind of service or market. And so I really would encourage companies to explore meshing it at meshing.it or to and begin to discover new ways that they may offer access rather than just selling a product once, but engage a customer and maintain a relationship with that customer or partner through a whole life cycle.
Thanks for that, Lisa. That was absolutely amazing. I think the mesh model is something that I'm definitely seeing a pattern developing in lots of interesting, exciting businesses where this kind of access is more important than ownership of. And yeah, I definitely recommend reading the book and checking out your website, meshing.it.
That would be a super outcome. I would really appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.